Our first reading comes from 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 1 to 13. In our work together with God, then, we beg you who have received God's grace not to let it be wasted. Hear what God says. When the time came for me to show you favour, I heard you. When the day arrived for me to save you, I helped you. Listen, this is the hour to receive God's favour. Today is the day to be saved. We do not want anyone to find fault with our work, so we try not to put obstacles in anyone's way. Instead, in everything we do, show that we are God's servants by patiently enduring troubles, hardships, and difficulties. We have been beaten, jailed, and mobbed. We have been overlooked and have gone without sleep or food. By our purity, knowledge, patience, and kindness, we have shown ourselves to be God's servants. By the Holy Spirit, by our true love, by our message of truth, and by the power of God. We have righteousness as our weapon, both to attack and to defend ourselves. We are honoured and disgraced. We are insulted and praised. We are treated as liars, yet we speak the truth. As unknown, yet we are known by all. As though we were dead, but as you see, we live on. Although punished, we are not killed. Although saddened, we are always glad. We seem poor, but we make many people rich. We seem to have nothing, yet we really possess everything. Dear friends in Corinth, we have spoken frankly to you. We have opened our hearts wide. It is not we who have closed our hearts to you. It is you who have closed your hearts to us. I speak now as though you were my children. Show us the same feelings that we have for you. Open your hearts wide. And then from Mark 4, verses 35 to 41. On the evening of that same day, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let us go across to the other side of the lake." So they left the crowd. The disciples got into the boat in which Jesus was already sitting, and they took him with them. Other boats were there too. Suddenly a strong wind blew up, and the waves began to spill over the boat so that it was about to fill with water. Jesus was in the back of the boat, sleeping with his head on a pillow. The disciples woke him up and said, "Teacher, don't you care that we're about to die?" Jesus stood up and commanded the wind, "Be quiet." And he said to the waves, "Be still." The wind died down, and there was a great calm. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Why are you frightened? Do you still have no faith?" But they were terribly afraid and began to say to one another, "Who is this man? Even the wind and the waves obey him." This is the word of the Lord.
The very first words that we heard David read today, I think, are always important for us to remember. When Paul continues in his letter, this second letter to the church in Corinth, he says, "In our work together with God, then, we beg you who have received God's grace not to let it be wasted." So those of us that have found our lives changed, transformed by what Christ has done, the encouragement is to make sure we don't waste that. And part of the way we waste it sometimes is if we keep it to ourselves. You know, those times when perhaps someone's seen you doing a job or watching on at some work you've been doing or something you've been working on or constructing or creating or whatever it might be, and then they wait till you finish and then they say, you know, there's an easier way to do that, don't you? And it's kind of all too late, isn't it? You know, why didn't you tell me that before? Paul is encouraging the people of Corinth not to keep this wonder they've discovered in who Jesus is to themselves. But one of the places that we find ourselves living is in this strange middle sometimes, where we're not quite understood perhaps, sort of an in-between, between what we strive for and what we actually achieve. You know, we want to do all this stuff, but we maybe only get quite this far. Between what people might think of us and what we might think of ourselves. And that flips both ways, doesn't it? So sometimes people think we're quite wonderful, and yet we know that maybe they don't know everything about us, and there's other times when it spins the other way. Sometimes that's because of our humility or because of the way we compare ourselves to other people. I'm delighted, for example, that Janet is here playing this morning, and yet I know that Janet sometimes wonders whether she's up to the task. But I want to tell you, we see you as perhaps more capable than you see yourself, and we're delighted that you're here. Even more so, you might not realise that Janet's struggling with a crook shoulder at the moment, making life even a little bit more complicated, and she's still here helping us offer our worship this morning. So that's just a really simple example of the way we think of ourselves sometimes, and other people see us differently. But it happens all the way through our lives. Times when we discover capacities that people have or experiences that they've had in the past that we never knew about. We see them in a particular spot. It's almost like seeing a still picture instead of a movie. It's just a snapshot of a person, of their life, is the bit that we see. Sometimes it's quite narrow. We don't realise that there's all these other capacities that they have or experiences that equip them perhaps better for a task than we might think. Sometimes it's because people don't see all of us, just as I've mentioned. But Paul seems to speak of that diversity in some very unusual ways, and perhaps he didn't quite grab them all as David shared them. So I'll take you through them again. Paul says, as he speaks to the people in Corinth, we are honoured and disgraced, insulted and praised, that we are treated as liars and yet we speak the truth, unknown and yet known by all. We are treated as though we are dead, but as you can see, we live on. And although punished, we are not killed. Although saddened, we are always glad. We seem poor, but we make many people rich. We seem to have nothing, and yet we really possess everything. These strange dichotomies or opposite ends of ideas, where we find ourselves actually living in the middle rather at either end much of the time. Paul always longs to see the good news shared. That's part of where that opening statement comes from. We beg that you who have received God's grace will not let it be wasted. He always wants to see and know and understand that people are sharing the good news about Jesus. Part of that is because he's so driven, because he had it so wrong himself. When you look back at around about Acts chapter 9, you'll see and read the story of Paul's transformation, of his conversion, if you like. And if you haven't looked at that story for a while, maybe it's worth going back and having a look. A person who didn't believe anything about the claims of Jesus, who is suddenly confronted by the reality of that. And as we read through all of Paul's letters that follow, we see so often that he's motivated, very strongly motivated, by wanting to make up for that, what he sees as a horrendous mistake. wanting to set the record straight to help people understand who Jesus really is. But Paul also understands what it's like to journey through hardship and difficult times. Later in this same letter, this second letter to the people of Corinth, in chapter 11, he actually compiles a list. And as you read through Paul's letters, I've mentioned this to you before, Paul loves a good list. Right? As you read through the letters, you'll see Paul's always making lists about all sorts of different things. But he, in his conversation with them, and perhaps finds its base in these kind of things that we've talked about today, those differences that we find ourselves living in, he talks about the things that he's had to overcome. So from chapter 11, he writes, I've been in prison, I've been whipped, I've been near to death more often. 5 times I was given 39 lashes by the Jews, 3 times I was whipped by the Romans, and once I was stoned, had rocks thrown at him till he was nearly dead. I've been in 3 shipwrecks, and once I spent 24 hours in the water. I've been in danger from floods and from robbers, in danger from my own people and from the Gentiles. There have been dangers in cities, dangers in the wild, dangers on the high seas, dangers from false friends. There was work and toil. Often I've gone without sleep. I've been hungry and thirsty. I have often been without enough food or shelter or clothing, not to mention other things. And then he says, amongst those other things, every day I'm under the pressure of my concern for all the churches. Paul gives himself incredibly for these people. He doesn't want to see the grace that he's been given go to waste by not sharing it with others. So how does he overcome all of these things? I mean, that's an incredible list, isn't it? I mean, we've all been through tough times from moment to moment or in different stages of our life, but I'm not sure we'd have many of us would have a list that would compare to that. I mean, I might have got spanked a couple of times when I was a kid, but it was nothing like that. Thank goodness. So this remarkable person, how does he overcome those things? How would Paul encourage us to continue on when we find life is closing in on us or we're finding life a little tricky? Paul says in his own words, I choose to forget all things except Christ crucified. I choose to focus entirely on what Christ has done for me. And that's what enables him to journey through those moments and can enable us to do the same. If we put our focus on what Christ has done and who Jesus is, then that makes an incredible difference in the way we live and organise our lives. And that's what comes alive for us in this second story. In the second story where Jesus crosses the lake in the midst of trouble and the fear that they might perish, the people in the boat turn to Jesus. Do you remember what's going on for Jesus in the story? Did you hear it as David read? The storm is happening, the wind is blowing up, the waves are lapping into the boat. So this is a fairly serious bit of water that they're in the middle of. These people are panicking in fear for their life, and they turn to Jesus, and what's he doing? Do you remember? He's asleep with his head on a pillow. Isn't that just like these strange differences that Paul has identified? In the same boat, in the same journey, there are 12 people who are terrified that they're about to die in the midst of this horrendous storm, and here is Jesus asleep with his head on a pillow at complete peace, not at all concerned about anything that's happening around him. Denise shared a story with me during the week, and she talked about sharing that with you today, and I've asked her to come and share that as part of this conversation. I'm going to be the prop person. I have part of the story to hold up when the time comes, but it's really good of Denise to be willing to share this story with you. Thanks, Denise.
Sounds like Lou's life he just talked about. true.
I told this story back in 2010 at Teenagers. What happens when you talk to strangers? I was always told not to talk to strangers. Well, I was on my way to work several years ago. I got off the train at Auchenflower Station when a lady asked me how to get to the Wesley Hospital. I said to her I was going there if she wanted to come with me. On our way, I found out she was going to have major surgery and had come down on her own, pardon me, from Biggerton. Her husband was working. I pointed her in the right direction to the hospital, but first gave her my name and asked her for hers and a number she could, if she needed help while she was in the hospital. I went over to see her in hospital before I came home. She was sitting doing her sewing on some material she had brought with her. When they came to take her for surgery, I told her I would keep in touch. So I went back to see her when I went to work the next week. She was in a bad way, and over the next several weeks, she went back to surgery several times. I found it very humbling that someone you never knew to pack up their belongings every time she went to surgery. She told me one day, this minister she knew, told me one day about this minister that she knew very well. His nickname was Friar Tuck. Later, I was talking to a friend, and her husband is a deacon in the Anglican Church, and I was telling her about my experience, and she told me that their minister's name was Friar Tuck. I found we were talking about the same person. I asked her to ask him to go and see her at the Wesley. When I got up to ICU to see her the next time, there he was. When she was about to be discharged, I packed her up again for her, and she said, I want you to have this. I made it. I was very emotional about what she had made. It now hangs in our bedroom. It's the first thing I see every morning when I wake up. When she told me she was from Biggerton, I pricked up my ears because Lou's family was from Biggerton. So the moral is sometimes helping strangers does turn out okay, and we do still keep in touch. But this is what happened. She's rung me several times since Lou's passing, but when I ring her back, her phone was disconnected. I sent her a thank you card, and she rang me last Saturday night. They had lost the purse, so she had to get a new phone. She was having a rotten day, and she got my card. She's now living with what I've just been through with Lou. So I hope that I can help her through what I've just gone through. So that's the story. Thanks.
Can you thank Denise for sharing that? Thank her for sharing that, please. And you might not be able to read it from there. You probably can't, actually. But the little writing on this particular piece, wall hanging, says, if friends were flowers, I'd pick you. So.
That's pretty cool.
The ways that we find ourselves being able to engage with people for Jesus' sake are often there. Sometimes we overlook the opportunities, sometimes we simply don't recognise them when they come, and other times, because of the pace of life or whatever, we find that we don't have the time, or we don't think we have. But in that instance, as Denise shared, here's someone who, in the midst of someone else's storm, made herself available to be that touch of Christ in that moment, to make a difference in the life of that person. And this is what we see happening in this second reading. As they're making their way across the lake, we need to understand that there are things happening on different levels. We've talked about this once or twice before, but it bears reminding. That when we read the scriptures, the stories themselves are always powerful. Just the narrative, without understanding anything else, speaks remarkably to us. But then when we understand a little bit more of what underlies that, what's happening in the story, then it gives them even more weight, I believe. So in this particular story, we need to remember the mindset of those that are journeying with Jesus. They know strongly the first five books of what we call the Old Testament, what the Hebrew people called the Torah, the books of the law. And the very first story, in the very first book, is the creation story in the beginning. The earth was formless and desolate, and it was covered with a raging ocean, and God's Spirit moved. And that's the story that goes through in days, remember? And in the first day, lights appear, and then water above and water below. And then on the third day, the water is separated and land appears. So for Jewish people of Jesus' time, Hebrew people of Jesus' time, there was this sense that there was something treacherous about large bodies of water. They're the leftovers of this chaos that was present in creation. So for the people in the boat, with the wind blowing and the waves starting to crash over, there's not just a sense that they might drown, but there's also a sense that they might be pitched into this chaos, into this evil. So that when Jesus then, stirred from his sleep, gets up and demonstrates power over the physical elements, stops the wind and calms the waves, there's this reminder of God speaking over creation, but also saving them from the possibility of being pitched into evil. So there's a physical way that Jesus is saving these people, but there is also a spiritual sense that this is happening as well. Remembering that they are crossing the lake, and we read this in the Gospels from time to time. You know, went from one side of the lake to the other and back again, and they crossed the lake and crossed the lake. The lake goes from Jewish territory to Gentile territory, so they're also going, in a sense, from the known to the unknown, or even the godly to the ungodly. All of these things are going through their heads as they find themselves in the middle of this storm. And it's God's willingness to be with, through Jesus, that allows them to overcome. The Old Testament story for today, which we didn't read, is the story of David and Goliath. And being a younger brother growing up, some 6 years behind the next one of my three older brothers, I remember being the annoying younger brother that no one wanted to hang around. Can I come with? No, you can't come with. Oh, come on, let me. No, no, I'm going with my mates. You've got to stay here. In the story, David goes to visit his older brothers who are part of the army of Saul, sitting up on the hill and hearing this giant of a man, Goliath, call out to them each day to send their best. You know, we're not going to engage in a massive battle. I'm the champion of this group. You send your champion and I'll fight them, and it's winner take all. And David's visiting his older brother, says, how come no one's going down? You can take this guy. Can you imagine a younger brother, sister saying that to you? You got this covered. Just do it. He's going, you have no idea what you're talking about. And they send him away. He goes to Saul's tent. He says, I can take this guy. The arrogance of youth. In the end, Saul thinks he needs to be dressed in the things that he's relying on. The armour of a human being. And the story tells us that David can't move in it. And what he has said all the way along to his brothers and to the king is, every time when I've looked after the flocks for my father and there's been a threat, God has helped me overcome. And God will help me overcome this man who threatens us. And that's exactly what happens. Folks, we don't always get it right. Remember that list of things that Paul gave us about the places that we find ourselves living between, the things that we would aspire to be and the things that we actually are. When David sets aside his willfulness and takes on God's will for his life, he is able to overcome incredible obstacles. As soon as he starts to focus on his own wants, his own desires, he falls to probably the most base level that any human can fall to. Jealousy, infidelity, compounded by guilt, shame, he ultimately leads to the scheming to take another person's life. He has fallen so far. But on recognizing his mistake, has the opportunity to be restored. David's life really does oscillate between those extremes that Paul alludes to. Jesus calms the storm, literally, figuratively, and spiritually. He reminds us that he is there for us in these moments as well, that we too are able to be drawn into such a way, recognizing Christ is present, making the journey through those difficult times to overcome the things that confront us. Let's always remember all that Christ has done so that we can live as fully as his people as we are able and not waste the grace that's been extended to us. Amen.